welcome to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is filmmaker Penny Lane. You probably know her from other films that she has done, including some that have screened here in Park City, including Hail Satan. But today we are going to be discussing a film called Wild Inside, and this is the story of the owl Flacco. Now, Flacco has been a topic of conversation on our program before, but you really took a deep dive into Flacco's world, what happened, and a myriad scope of people who surrounded this story. So Penny Lane, thank you so much for being a part of This Green Earth today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Let's get started first with learning a little bit more about you, your path as a filmmaker, and then also this particular topic. What drew you to this? So let's start there, getting to know you.
Sure. I've been making documentary films for a long time now. That Wild Inside is my 8th feature documentary. And I got into films actually because I had a summer job in college teaching little kids how to make movies, and I thought it looked really fun and I wanted to make movies, and so I started to make movies with them, and that's kind of how I ended up where I am today, a professional filmmaker, if such a thing exists. And this story, as all my best films really, this is true of, but this story kind of demanded my attention completely. I didn't come up with it. It came to me that minute that Flacco the owl appeared mysteriously on the Fifth Avenue sidewalk in February 2023 outside the Bergdorf Goodman in the Plaza Hotel, the least owly place you could imagine in the heart of Manhattan. This Eurasian eagle owl, this magnificent creature with a 6-foot wingspan and pumpkin orange eyes, looking as lost and out of place as anything I've ever seen in my life. And I was obsessed immediately, as were many people, as you know, immediately. Who is this owl? Where did he come from? Does he need help? You know, I always joke that I'll never have an easier time getting an audience to care about my protagonist again. Like, it's just so easy to love Flacco and to care about him and to like want to know more about him. And the film was an attempt to do that.
Yes, this story, the story of Flacco, found its way into people's hearts across the nation, across the world. This owl who is, like you said, in a place where it's foreign for all of us to see this owl in the spaces that we're seeing Flacco. Let's come back a little bit, though, to how Flacco was released into the wild and where he was prior to that, and then how that plays into his story.
For sure. Yeah. So what we found out about this owl on the sidewalk was that he had escaped from the Central Park Zoo. And as you said, to be more precise, what had happened was that someone, to this day, we don't know who did this. There was no arrests ever made. Someone broke into the Central Park Zoo and cut open his enclosure using some kind of bolt cutters or something, and presumably encouraged him to fly free, or he got out. We don't know what that person was intending. For all we know, they were intending to kidnap or steal Flacco. We don't know what their intentions were, but the result was that Flacco was released into the world. And so the first part of the story is very much about this animal who cannot hunt for himself, basically slowly starving to death before our eyes because he couldn't eat. As the zoo is trying to capture him and trying increasingly elaborate methods to capture him, and he keeps getting away. You know, there's a lot of suspense and fear in that early part of the story about what was going to happen to him. He also could barely fly at that point. So, you know, I can only speculate about his life before he was released, because the Central Park Zoo didn't, you know, just refuse to answer any of our multiple attempts to ask them to comment on questions like, was he really always in that tiny little enclosure? Mm-hmm. Did he ever get out into a bigger flight cage? Did he ever get flight exercise? Did he have enrichment activities? Like, I don't have the answers. All we know is that he was in this tiny enclosure for 13 years. He had been born in captivity in North Carolina and had come to the Central Park Zoo when he was about 8 months old. And so, yeah, he had never hunted for himself and he could truly barely fly. And to answer the first big point of mystery that I had that first night is like, what is he doing sitting on the sidewalk? Why isn't he flying away? Mm-hmm. I think the answer in retrospect is probably that he was exhausted. I think he flew 3 blocks from the Central Park Zoo to that spot on the sidewalk and probably was completely worn out because his wing muscles probably had never fully really developed at that point. So what you were seeing in those early weeks was this zoo animal kind of learn to fly and learn to hunt. And it was just absolutely captivating.
Yes, the fact that even after all those years in captivity or smaller enclosures, not something that an owl in the wild would have to contend with. They are instinctual, they learn how to hunt, and they live this very broad life in this vast life. And so coming from all Flacco knew to tapping into that natural instinct was unfolding in front of everyone's eyes, that we are seeing the true wildness of this animal. And, you know, the film is called Wild Inside. Its true being is to be free and to hunt and to do all these things. So as you're telling the story of how Flacco taps into those instincts, what was it that really captured your attention the most about that point in the story?
I mean, it's exactly that thing that made me want to make the film. So, you know, the debates kind of raging around what's best for Flacco. Is he better off in a safe place where he can be given, you know, excellent medical care and, you know, no dangers, whatever face him, versus being out in the wild? And of course, not in his natural habitat, it's important to say. This is an owl that was released, again, into Midtown Manhattan. He made Central Park his home, as do, you know, 300 species of birds. So Central Park is a pretty nice place for birds. There's not a lot of rat poison in Central Park. That's a very important part of the story. So, you know, so he made Central Park his home, and I was just like, we gotta make a film about this, because one, there's never been an owl that's been as documented as this owl. So I have an opportunity as a filmmaker, by collaborating with all of these dozens and dozens of birders and tourists and everyday New Yorkers who were getting these great images of Flacco as he went about his life, to bring my audience into contact with an owl as main character in a way that seemed once in a lifetime, you know, if that. But then two, all these philosophical questions about kind of freedom and risk versus safety and comfort all felt very pressing and very important to everybody. Every human being knows that conflict. Mm-hmm. And then three, he was challenging our distinctions about what kind of an animal he was. Was he domesticated? Was he a zoo animal? Was he a wild animal? It seems that he was all of the above and more, in a combination of features that we've never seen before. So it just felt like so compelling and so interesting. And I knew I wasn't the only one who was obsessed. And so that gave me the confidence to pursue it as a film.
Right. And it does beg the question, to your point, sometimes we put ourselves in those positions as humans to say, we know best what this animal needs or should have, or protections, instead of allowing an animal to instinctually do what it's going to do. And I love that complication in all of this, because of course, I think most of us would say, of course we want Flacco to be safe. Of course we don't want anything to happen to Flacco, but also, mm-hmm. What is a life in captivity? Would any of us choose to be free if we were given the choice, or to be in captivity? What would we choose? And so that question is obviously throughout the entire film. And I think you allow the viewer to make that decision.
Make up their own mind. Of course. Yeah. Yes, of course. My goal was never to tell any woman to think, you know, and I just want to say something interesting that you mentioned earlier. You said his wild instinct as an owl to seek freedom. Even that statement, some people would say, is anthropomorphic. Some people would say, oh, an owl doesn't know what freedom is. Like, what are you, that's a human concept. And I'm just like, okay, let's at least like think about that a little bit. You know, I think that people tend to think that there's really only two options when it comes to animals. Like option one is anthropomorphized, like as if we're like Beatrix Potter, you know what I mean? Like we're children, like, you know, and we're just pretending that these are essentially humans and animal suits and, you know, completely inventing like, you know, a whole world for them that doesn't exist. Or option two, we refuse to imagine anything at all of what an animal might think or want or feel because it's, we don't want to be anthropomorphic, you know, it's such a sin. And I'm just like, hello, there are many shades of gray between those two positions. And, you know, every time someone accuses me of being anthropomorphic, for example, I'm just like, you know that humans are animals, right? Like, we're not gods, you know, placed upon this earth that are completely separate from the animal kingdom. Like, you know, an owl is a very alien species to a human in many ways. It's hard to imagine what it's like to be an owl. But in other ways, we are all just living creatures, you know, pursuing pretty similar ends, you know, trying to express what it is to be a human the same way that he's trying to express what it is to be an owl. And there are some overlaps in what we want. And the idea, the concept of freedom, of course, has never occurred to an owl because they possess no concepts. But, you know, anyone who's ever seen a wild animal get put in a cage can tell you that an animal knows what freedom is and that they prefer to have it if you know, at all possible. Obviously, a domesticated animal is a different story. So, you know, your dog might need to be crate trained, for example, and they love that crate and it gives them a huge amount of comfort. That's like a very specific domesticated animal example. But at the end of the day, Flacco asked us to question whether he was a zoo animal or a wild animal. And he, with his choices, I think gave us his answer.
Yes. If we watch his behaviors and how he quickly adapted to learning how to be free and wild, shows us what we need to know. And if we're paying attention to that, I don't know that it's so much being anthropomorphic as it is that we're paying attention to another beast. Attitudes and reactions.
Yes, of
to
course.
Things.
And that's why I think, you know, like I understand fears of anthropomorphizing. Of course, that's an error, a philosophical error. But when I look around in the world, the last thing that I think is the biggest problem is that the biggest problem we have is that we don't even bother at all to extend our empathy to non-human animals. And ultimately, Flacco was so magnetic. He was so magnificent. He was beautiful. He was, you know, did I mention he's beautiful? He was beautiful. And he had this incredible outlaw story and this cool underdog story and all this stuff. But ultimately, he's just another owl. And I knew the film would be a total failure if we never at least attempted to ask people to look around at the natural environment around us, especially in cities, especially in a city like New York City, which you think doesn't have any nature in it, doesn't have any animals in it. But of course, it's full of animals. It's full of nature because humans are part of nature and humans are animals too. But there are all these non-human animals around us who are struggling to survive just like we are. And a lot of the choices that humans make in our absolute arrogance and egocentrism, anthropocentrism, is you know, making it harder for these non-human neighbors to survive and thrive. And I think the film tries to ask people to expand that aperture a little bit beyond this one charismatic story, this one charismatic animal with a great backstory, to all the animals that share this world with us, and ask us if we can be better neighbors to them, because I think we can be, and there are some pretty obvious ways that we can.
Living with and not trying to control the world around us is an interesting
concept. Coexistence, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are things that have happened because of Flacco. Flacco did teach us so much, and we had to turn the lens on ourselves a little bit in the moment that Flacco passed. Because he was weakened by some rat poisoning and other things that he'd gotten into, and that ultimately was his demise. And since then, there's been pursuit of laws to help mitigate these things. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's important to say that Flacco, you know, lived as a wild owl for a year in New York City. He thrived, he adapted, he proved that he could take care of himself. There were limits to that, of course. He really would have liked to have found a mate. He was doing all the behaviors that a male owl would be doing to try to find a mate, but of course it was quite tragic because he was never going to find one. I mean, so there were limitations on what his life was ever going to be. But nonetheless, he was doing kind of great, you know, for a long time. But ultimately, he did die the way that wild birds of prey die in New York City. They die from rat poison. There's really no escaping it. You know, if you do an autopsy on all the red-tailed hawks that die in New York City and you ask how many of them have rat poison in their system, it's pretty much all of them. It's all of them. So I knew, and anyone who knew anything about birds in the beginning, I knew he would probably die this way, because that is how hawks and eagles and owls die in cities. They die from a buildup of rat poison. When Flacco died, he had four different types of rat poison in his system. He was further weakened from a herpes virus that he got from eating pigeons. Pigeons have this herpes virus that can be fatal to Eurasian eagle owls. But he was weakened by these four rat poisons that came long before that. And it was really only a matter of time before that did him in, which is horrible, you know? And so even in my film, as you're kind of rooting and rah-rahing for his freedom, there are many Cassandra-like moments along the way that basically tell you what the end is going to be, because it wasn't a surprise to any of us who know a lot about how birds of prey live. And so to me, it's important to remember that he died the way wild birds die, and that if you, again, care, if you wept, if you shed a tear because of Flacco's death, like, it is so supremely important to think about the red-tailed hawk that died the very next day the same way. Even if you can't bring yourself to care about the rats who die a horrible, painful death of bleeding out from the inside from these horrible rat poisons, even if you can't bring yourself to care about the rats, a lot of people can bring themselves to care about the eagles, the owls, and the hawk that prey on the rats that we are also poisoning. So one of the things that happened after Flacco died, as you mentioned, is the New York City Council passed a law called Flacco's Law. It was a suite of things, but one thing I want to point out in particular was there's a pilot program in there to try a rat contraception program to keep rats from breeding so much as an alternative to giving them poison that, again, makes them die a horrible, painful death and also makes the birds of prey die that way too. So I haven't heard anything about that. I'm hoping that we'll hear some results of that pilot program soon. I hope it started already. I don't know. I gotta find out. But so Flacco's death was very galvanizing, even for me. And I knew all of this before, but I know it a lot more now about how horrible rat poison really is and how irresponsible our use of it is.
I was going to ask you that, because when you embark on doing a documentary film, there are so many facets of it, and you have to choose your path and how you're going to tell the story, but you're learning so much in that process. And it sounds like you have taken in a lot about different aspects, and it kind of ripples out into wild birds that are in Central Park. What is happening to them? Coming down to what is happening to those rats. So as you were developing this knowledge and putting this film together, how has it affected or changed you? And do you look at Central Park the same? Do you look at those trees the same? Or how has this affected you?
I mean, ultimately, I'll never see as many places in New York City that I will always associate with Flacco. I always thought of it as, like, everywhere he appeared, he made that place a little more magical, like as if something magical could happen at any second. There could be something so incredible as an Eurasian eagle owl sitting on your air conditioner, looking in your kitchen window. That could happen, you know? I never would have imagined that could happen. So his appearance in New York City was a gift to all of us. He really did make the city more magical and connect me to the sense of wildness that was already here in a deeper way.
Right. And so with this film, tell us where it's going to be, how people can see it, and what your hopes are for the audiences to take this in.
Yeah. Great. So the world premiere of the film is in Central Park on Wednesday, July 29th at 8:30 p.m. on the Great Lawn. It's a free screening open to the public. We really thought it would only be fitting to premiere the film where the film was made for the community of people who participated in making it. In so many ways, hundreds of New Yorkers participated in making this film. And so this is our hometown world premiere. It goes into movie theaters 2 days later, starting on July 31st at the IFC Center in New York. And then it rolls out across the country in select theaters starting on Tuesday, August 4th, which I'm sure all of your listeners know is International Owl Awareness Day. And so we're doing a big push to put the movie in theaters for International Owl Awareness Day and then for the weeks to follow. So yeah, people can look at flaccodocumentary.com to see if it's playing at a theater near them. And I think my hope for the audience is that they will be able to experience a great story with a great main character. The story has many surprising twists and turns. Even if you think you know Flacco's story, there are many things that happen that you probably didn't know. It's just a really entertaining, I would say, odyssey. And it just happens to be about an owl. And it's really, again, a once in a lifetime opportunity to try to spend 90 minutes inhabiting, trying to imagine what is it like to be an owl. What is it like to be an owl who lived in a box for 13 years and then suddenly had all the freedom that you could imagine? What is it like to be a Eurasian eagle owl who's supposed to be living in canyons in Eurasia to find himself on the Upper West Side of Manhattan? It's really a philosophical and fun film, I think.
And to that point, you had to collect all of these things from lots of people. So obviously they were so invested that they wanted to share this with you and they wanted to share this with a greater audience, what they had captured about him to let his life have a bigger legacy even. You also tried to put together a way in which we would see through his eyes. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So one of the first things in not anthropomorphizing another animal is to understand what their sensory capacities are. What is it? How do they see? How do they hear? How do they experience the world? And so we did a lot of research. I asked a lot of dumb questions of a lot of esteemed scientists over many months as I learned about things like owl vision. And so one of the things we did in the film was we tried to represent how an owl sees. And the delightful thing that I discovered early on is that because owls' eyes are in the front of their heads, unique amongst all bird species, I'm sure as everyone knows, and they're actually fixed inside their eye sockets. They can't look left and right the way we can. They can only turn their head or move up and down. And so they have very good long range vision and not really good peripheral vision. It's like all about this long distance, like, oh, I can see that mouse, you know, scurrying 500 yards that direction. I realized early on that there's an incredible parallel to the way that the birders see birds, because we've got these binoculars attached to our faces. And it actually is a very similar sort of vision. No peripheral vision, really good long distance. You know, you can't look left, right. You have to move your whole head. And I was like, what a beautiful parallel. So a big part of the film is spent developing that visual metaphor, because it did so often seem that Flacco was watching us as much as we were watching him. So we did everything we could to try to put you inside his head wherever we could, to see the world the way he might have seen it wherever we could.
Yeah, and you did such a beautiful job of that. And you really take us into this world. What a year. I mean, what a way in which he made an imprint and an impact on every place that he went in New York, and that we're still talking about this, that there are laws being enacted. So this bird and this life outside of those caged walls really meant something to so many of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can only hope that if Flacco could see my film, and if Flacco could understand the project, that he would think I got it right. I mean, I'd hope so. But
I think you did him proud. I think you did him proud. Well, we appreciate you being part of this Green Earth. It's Penny Lane, filmmaker who has done so many films in your portfolio, and this is one that we are excited to see. I hope it comes into our community. I'll be vying to get it in our Park City film because we have such a wonderful way of displaying films here in our community.
Yay.
So we would love to see it here. So I think that all people should take this in, and it really tells us a lot about ourselves and the wild world around us. It's called Wild Inside, and it's about Flacco, the owl, the Eurasian owl that changed New York City and all of our hearts along the way. So thank you so much for being a part of this Green Earth today. And if people want to learn more about you and your other films, is there a website that they can go to?
Yeah, they can go to pennylaneismyrealname.com.
I love it. So great. Well, thanks, Penny Lane, for being a part of our world today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth.
If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review, and we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.